Mark, thank you very much for joining me today to record this podcast. So this is about your work at Coastline on damp and mould. But first of all, would you like to introduce yourself? So who are you? What do you do at Coastline?
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me. Very pleased to be here. So I'm Mark England. I'm the head of innovation, sustainability and procurement at Coastline. That's a job that's sort of changed and it's evolved over the years, but I previously managed all of the maintenance here at sometimes, and I've worked my way sort of through various different aspects of the jobs. So I've got a lot of background in our sort of approach to damp, mould, insulation, ventilation systems, and keeping our stock in really good condition.
Thank you, Mark. So at Coastline, as a social housing landlord, you seem to be way ahead of the curve when it comes to damp and mould. Were you already quite active in looking at addressing damp and mould when our original Spotlight report on damp and mould came out back in 2021, I believe it was?
Yeah, so just prior to that coming out, we'd already started doing surveys about some of our customers. So what we tended to do was look at our CRM systems, the customer relationship management systems, and our repair systems. And we tended to do some sort of interrogation of those to look at damp and mould. And we then sent surveys to customers within certain areas, certain groups of homes, asking them to report back if they had any damp or mould or any concerns with their home. And that could be simple things like that they realised that the fan wasn't working anymore. We had a case where we put some external wall insulation on a house and that fan clearly wasn't working the way it should be because we covered the grill up. So there were lots of sort of things that we'd already been doing. We'd also sort of from that, we'd started to build a bit more of a strategy towards how we could manage damp and mould in homes. Cornwall is a really damp atmosphere most of the time. So it is quite a difficult sort of area, I think, to work in. So we needed to know and understand it's not going to go away. So it's better that we go hunting, if you like, go finding out where these issues might be. We basically would use the information from the damp and mould surveys, use a specialist contractor. They were going to the homes. And from a very early stage, so quite a number of years ago, we were already doing wipe down, wash downs of walls, giving customers advice, guidance. And then we started looking at how we can make that a little bit better. We do the follow-up surveys then around the 4 to 6 weeks after the work was completed, just to make sure that actually we dealt with the issue. And sometimes we hadn't. Sometimes, you know, some things have come back and we needed to sort of deal with those again. But also we did find out sometimes that customers had turned their fans off because they thought they're using too much electricity or maybe they were a bit noisy. So that's a little bit of a challenge. So it's that sort of education process and understanding people's perspectives and their sort of fears. So we sort of moved along then, and over probably 4 years, we'd carried out, I think it was 1,976 mould, damp and condensation surveys using a specialist, which is a significant investment. We've got 5,000 homes, that's two-fifths of the stock. From that, around sort of 1,700 or 1,800 fan services or repairs and all the replacements of some of the fans. We did find quite a number of fans actually that were broken. So they needed to be fixed, hadn't necessarily been reported. And we also found some gaps in our services where we have some specific builds where when we fitted new kitchens, you would have to change the glazing to put a fan in because you couldn't put a hole through the wall, and they're Cornish units. So we found that actually some of those have been missed over the periods of time. We'd replaced the kitchen, but not put the fan and the glazed unit in for various reasons. But we carried out, I think, up to somewhere around August to November 2020. We'd done around 500 customers that we had sent those proactive surveys to. And then we did about another 140 or so in 2021 and around the same in 2022. So we started with quite a big cluster, and then we started honing in on the properties where we knew there were definitely issues with some of the other properties. So they felt like the hotspots to go to next. I think the other part I would add is we did also sort of start to uncover a little bit more about some of our customers, their anxieties, hardships, where they needed a bit more support, mental health and well-being. And as you move into the sort of COVID time, that was all sort of quite an anxious time for everybody. So again, damp and mold didn't feel probably very sort of important to some people at that time, but we've continued sort of with our process and making sure we visited those properties.
Thank you, Mark. So when the original Spotlight report on damp and mold came out, what did you do with the information that we provided and those recommendations? Were you already on top of all of those, or did you self-assess against them? How did you take that report? What did you do with it?
Yeah, so basically took the document and we assessed ourselves against it as a quite large sort of frontline management team. We assessed ourselves and said, you know, where could we do better? Where were the gaps? How do you sort of find your silences? How do you find those sort of little silos of properties? Maybe that, you know, if it's a very small cluster of properties, we need to sort of just pick those up because they won't necessarily come through on survey data. And just the assessment of ourselves, really, really brutally honest against those indicators and the recommendations, that created a plan for us. And then we could start to think about, so how are we going to deliver this properly? We've done a really quite good job for a long time, but actually this is time now, the bar's been raised, so we need to change things. So we created then a ventilation standard and a ventilation strategy, just to sort of make sure we embedded things. And we started to talk to customer groups an awful lot more as well. Our customers have got a set of scrutiny teams that they can pull together. And we got them to look at the Ombudsman's report and said, you know, this is what we think we are. This is how we think we score. Do you think we're good or we're bad, or, you know, where can we improve? And they took that whole process right the way through. And, you know, we've got to be grateful. We got a really good group of customers, not a huge number of people, but a really good group who won't hold back and they tell you how things really are. That's really important.
Oh, amazing that you're engaging with residents and those that you call them customers as well to get that honest opinion. It's hard to assess yourself against something when you've perhaps written the policy, you've written the plan or the strategy. It's good to have that that different viewpoint and have that criticism so you can pull out the point, learning points, and change that for going forward. So you've already talked a little bit about finding your silence. We talk about finding your silence within the Spotlight on Damp and Mould report. How did you find your silence? How are you still doing this? And what has worked well with regards to the approach that you've taken?
Yeah, so it's very multiple angles, and it does a lot of it pivots around, educating a lot of our colleagues to make sure that when they're visiting customers in their homes, that they do flag things back to us and just report them. If they've got a concern with damp or mold or just the internal environment, maybe hoarding issues or something else, then that could lead on to other sort of ventilation problems, turning off fans, not heating their homes properly. So we use that sort of colleague network, if you like, on a day-to-day basis, so people are reporting things back. Also, our contractors, we spoke to our contractors and said, we do need you to tell us. We need to understand what's going on. And, you know, the heating contractors, if they're going to properties and they realise that maybe it's an oil-fired boiler and they realise it's actually not being used very much, they can tell that when they're servicing it. So they may report that back to us and say, actually, we're not sure that actually the heating system's being used as best it could. That whole empowering sort of like colleagues, we looked at that and tried to sort of resolve things before the complaints process. But we also reviewed our complaints process and took it from a sort of three-stage process to a two-stage, and then introduced sort of a more of a service failure sort of approach for colleagues who found something first time and said, actually, this doesn't feel like a fair set of circumstances. So there may be a gesture of goodwill. We might do something, a small payment, or maybe we just, you know, get the ventilation team in or deal with some other issues that are there. And I think that complaints process is a really useful tool. But if you try to stick rigidly to a three-stage process, if you like, then actually you tend to disempower the people who notice things very first, who could have just resolved it there and then, you know, rather than sort of leading things up a process, because it's a process that's been put in place. And I think, you know, we tended to talk an awful lot around sort of customers about refusing work. And we see some sort of issues where customers don't report repairs. something that we've done for quite a long time is we ran reports where it would identify customers who haven't reported a repair for 2 years. At one point, we used to do that. It used to look back 3 years, but actually it wasn't that many. So we scaled that to 2 years. And then we could cross-reference that with our known hard-to-access homes. We could look at a little bit of information from our gas servicing contractor who would say, yeah, this property is always quite difficult to get in. We do have a few concerns there. There's a bit of vulnerability. So that allows us just sort of really sort of quick glance. We can look at when the properties that haven't sort of raised a repair for 2 years, because it's highly unlikely that there isn't a single repair in lots of properties. Then we would sort of do a little bit more sort of research, talk to our other colleagues in tenancy management, customer services. They've all got a wealth of knowledge. They all know individuals. They all know certain people who maybe have some vulnerabilities. And we knew then we could sort of look at those and speak to them. And sometimes it's just about door knocking. Sometimes it's about going visiting and making sure everything's okay. And we also sort of looked across, I think in the 12-month period, we proactively contacted around sort of 60 customers who we felt were sort of very vulnerable. And they would more than likely have had a house visit just to have a chat through, just to make sure everything was well. So I think that's, you know, it is that communication point, and it is the sort of the whole sort of embracing sort of the community to a certain extent and using your ears and listening about what people are saying and who's not telling you anything at all, because they're the really sort of vulnerable.
Yeah. I know there's a few landlords who put on perhaps like a summer fete for their residents, and it gives them that opportunity to speak to the residents, and some of the residents, that's like their big family day out. They've got like donkey rides there and things like that, and all of the staff from that landlord organisation go. So it's like you're perhaps speaking to people that you wouldn't hear from necessarily. Or another landlord that we've spoken to, they one morning a week, each member of staff would go out into the communities that where they have homes, and they're just visible doing things like litter picking and gardening, just so they can be visible, and then residents know that they're going to be there and they can come up and talk to them. So it's great that you're doing that proactive, yeah. That almost a big door knock, but not quite a big door knock.
No, it's I think that, you know, we have other activities that go on sort of similar vein, but you know, we have things like, we used to call them skip amnesty days, but the days when we would send a team out to a specific area and we want people to clear their gardens of bits of rubbish and things. And if they've got stuff they've been hoarding or hanging on to in the property, maybe in the loft or whatever, then let's get it out. And if you don't really want it, let's get rid of it for you. Do that in a responsible way. We have our own recycling facility so we can recycle everything and do some good. And it really helps customers. And we continue to do that quite regularly through the year now.
Amazing. So you undertook some work with the University of Exeter on a project called the Smart Line Project. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that project?
Yeah, so Smart Line was really very unique. It's a collaboration which the University of Exeter actually headed up with Coastline Homes, so our properties and our customers. Cornwall Council were involved, and Volunteer Cornwall, a local volunteer organisation. And we basically put technology in 300 homes. And at the same time, we started having conversations around sort of a guided conversation about the customer's health, their well-being, what they aspired to, what they would like to do, what they felt was the best things about living in one of our homes, and what was not so good, what they thought, you know, was challenging maybe. That whole collaboration, you know, we looked at neighbourhoods, we improved some neighbourhoods, we did lots of tree planting. We have a really active group in some of our sheltered bungalows, and, you know, they were out there and they wanted to set up, they wanted to get some extra funding, which they got from a parish council or the town council, like it was. So they were really active and, a really, really useful project. From a damp and mould perspective, we could see that we developed with the University of Exeter, we needed to be able to visualize the data, we needed to be able to look at it and say, you know, this property is the worst, this one's not performing as well as this one, and start to do some comparisons. So we sort of collaborated together and built a dashboard. It was our dashboard, we built it, or the university built it, using their IT guys. And that allowed us to basically sort the data by property, which one's got the highest humidity in which room. It's simple stuff to click, but also meant you could look at carbon dioxide levels in rooms. So that may be to do with having lots of pets or aquarium tanks. It could be a whole set of things. So maybe over-occupation or high occupation of a property, or particularly in a room. So if you have high carbon dioxide in just the lounge and not in the bedroom or vice versa, then that person is probably, or those people are probably using one of those rooms a lot more than another. And that could be an indication of fuel poverty, you know, and they tend to be not heating their home as well. You cross-reference that with the temperature information, and it gives you a completely different picture of what's going on in the home. But Smartline was, you know, quite a clever sort of project in that we had a group of researchers in the background, and they are very independent group of people who would just take data, analyze it, and say, this is what it says. It's telling us that this is what happens in this type of home with this age of customer and lots of other sort of dynamics. But also we've got lots of case studies on the Smartline website that you'll be able to see. And yeah, there are instances where people have just turned the heating off in really cold conditions. We had two coordinators at Coastline who basically sort of coordinated every day and talked to customers on the Smartline project. And they'll chat through things they noticed on the dashboard to say, notice temperature's a little bit lower today in your home. Have you turned the heating down, or is there something else going on? And that whole like customer care sort of side. But it was the first of our real technology projects. We had used tech in the past. We used some digital hygrometers that we used to leave in people's homes, customers' homes, and we could collect those and take the data off those and then look at the profile of humidity and temperature and things. But this was the big, big project, to be fair. And it certainly has allowed the publication of a lot of independent research papers. There's lots of case studies, and there's loads of information there around how mold is, how the likelihood of mold, temperature and humidity information around sort of like customers' wants, really, and how in certain circumstances some customers don't mind having a low temperature. And actually, we have some properties where one particular property that springs to mind was high humidity with a low temperature, and it was always like that. And that sort of caused us a little bit of anxiety because we need to understand why that is. And it was interesting because those customers had two huge dogs, so they couldn't turn the temperature up. You know, the humidity levels were always going to be a little bit higher than a home of similar sort of size, because those big dogs breathe and they go out in the rain and they do all the things. And so it's like having four adults really in that home. So we fitted a positive pressure ventilation unit in that property, and that got rid of the whole issue with the humidity, and the temperature wasn't really affected. So the customers were delighted.
Brilliant. That sort of links into that knowing your stock and knowing your residents as well. And I think you just started to touch on some of the actions that you are taking to tackle damp and mould. What actions are you taking that are particularly working well in your homes?
Okay, so we carry out a full survey of the property, and that's really important. You need to understand completely what you're dealing with. We brought a lot of the service in-house now, so we don't use an external company as much. We still use them from time to time, but we're building sort of our own sort of in-house resource, which makes things slightly easier for us to manage as much as anything else. But it's important when that diagnosis is done to understand whether it's moisture coming into the property from a leak externally or leak in the roof or something in the cavity, rather than, you know, the actual sort of the occupation of the property, a lack of ventilation or the fan failing, or actually just the way the property is behaving. It requires a bit of additional ventilation, say the example with the two large dogs and the residents. So we've been fitting positive pressure ventilation systems. They work very well. Positive input ventilation, PIV as they're nicknamed. And we've had sort of about 300 or maybe 400 of these installed over the last probably 4 years or 5 years now. They work very, very well. They help. Also, we have some radon in some of our homes, so they definitely have a positive effect on radon levels as well. So we get a sort of another benefit from that, and the customer's benefit, of course. But I think the whole area of like the sensors and the technology is quite interesting. And we've now just recently introduced using technology in homes. And if you think of the technology as they're just two small sensors and they're like a first aid kit. So the customer now rings in and says, I've got some issues. And sort of, we'll book a surveyor, one of our own surveyors, to go and have a look. They can pop the two sensors in the home. And then immediately we're on stream then with live information about the temperature, humidity, carbon dioxide levels in the home in those two locations in the property. And once we can watch that, we can see exactly what's going on. We then go back to the property and carry out the works that are required. So we do the remedial works. Those sensors will show us how successful that's going to be. Or maybe it's not quite sufficient, so we might have to do some more work afterwards. But at least we'll know. You can't beat the data. The data is so sort of like honest. It may feel way better, but it might not be quite where you want it to be. So we're using the tech, and that's really seems to be working really well. We've also now partnered up with another company, and they're sort of starting to send some little nudges out. So this is our newest thing, if you like. So they're going to use WhatsApp. It's literally starting at the moment. And they'll send some nudges out to customers to say, actually, today is the humidity outside is quite low. So this is a good day to ventilate your home. If the weather's good, then that's good. It's a good time to ventilate. So we're trying to do that, but also perhaps pushing some positive messages out of saying, this is really great. Your humidity has dropped over the last 7 days. So that's really good. And your temperature seems to be keep staying fairly even. We've not worked the whole messaging out. They're experts at what they do. And we're going to soften the language and make sure that it's easily understood. But I think that's important, and trying to keep that constant stream of sort of communication. And when people get things right and things are improving, give them a little nudge to say, well done, that's really good. And not being that Coastline says in some patronizing way, oh, well done. It's a well done. We all appreciate that it can be quite difficult. So, we want to sort of reward people for doing things that are right.
And you might not necessarily know as a homeowner what the humidity level's like, and it's just giving them the information that they need and knowing what would benefit the property, because I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know at all. So, yeah, that sounds amazing. And be interested to find out in a few months' time how that's going, Mark.
We'll pull together a case study, because we tend to pull case studies together of most of these sorts of projects, and then we'll publish it. It's all open. We'll send some sort of publications out to explain what we've been doing and how it's worked and whether it hasn't. Some things don't work. You just have to accept that and move on to the next thing and try to communicate with your customers and find out why things don't work. That's really important.
But if you don't try, you'll never know.
That's right. Yeah.
So we released earlier this year our follow-up report on the damp and mould report. Was there anything in that report that surprised you at all?
I think as much as anything else, I think that somewhere around the 40% of landlords did not really make any changes. And that seems to be disappointing, if I'm honest. I think it's not easy. This whole process is not easy, and anyone who thinks it is probably isn't doing enough, maybe, or I've got fantastic homes, maybe, I don't know. I think what we found is the more open we've become, we're far more open to conversations. We tend to ask customers more. We're not afraid of people telling us they've got damp and mold issues. We're not afraid of trying to deal with them. We're not afraid of failing to deal with them and then having another go and doing something else. So it just seems sort of dismissive, doesn't it, really, that 41% of the landlords had not made any changes at that point. And actually, you just need to improve and just work your way through a plan. Consult with your customers. I think, if you don't consult and you don't provide the right information to customers, it doesn't feel like the right culture at all. It feels like that you're not that bothered, and there's a huge social value in social housing, and we've got to express that value and make sure that we live those our own corporate values, but also look after customers. And we house some of the most vulnerable people in the country, and you know, we do need to help them. And so I think it's disappointing. I think there were some comments in there about sort of lack of engagement of landlords, but I think there was also landlords who said they had a lack of engagement from customers. And maybe, again, perhaps it's just about trying a little bit harder. Perhaps it's a bit of a cultural shock across an organization where this is your damper mold isn't my problem. And it's not my boss's problem. It's everybody's problem. We need to deal with this and we need to get on with it. And if I see it in a property, then I take it on board and I want to report that back. I want to get it fixed. And sometimes that's really difficult. And sometimes it's difficult conversations. And sometimes it's really expensive, but that's the way it is. And I think, you know, the faster that people sort of embrace this whole process and get on with it, the better for everybody.
So do you have any advice then for landlords who are looking to improve in the area of damper mould?
I think probably the biggest point is almost repeating myself a little bit is this is not easy. This is quite tricky. And it being proactive is so important. And looking for the next thing. What's the next thing we can do? How do we unpick the next little action points? Sending out the surveys was one of our early days sort of actions, sending those little quick surveys to customers to say, yep, fan broken, bathroom, you know, everything else seems to be okay, not notice any mold. That's fine. Four clicks or six clicks and send it back to us. But I think, you know, you've got to sort of accept that you're going to get quite a lot of reports once you become good at communicating. That's the sort of the payback is you get a lot more people get in contact with you and that openness then. And you have to accept that. So be prepared. It's probably top of the list. But keep communicating, get the customers to have a look, get your staff teams to report things back, raise the bar a little bit and actually say, yeah, this is not you know, something you can ignore. If you don't feel happy with the property, just flag it back. It's something we could jointly sort of deal with. So I think it is just about being that really sort of open on ice. But, you know, in Coastline, we always say that accountability. And, you know, if you go to a property, you should be accountable for what you've seen and try to then deal with it. But follow that through. It's not necessarily enough just to email someone and say, oh, notice a bit of mold today in someone's house. Make sure the work order gets placed. Make sure you find out if the surveyor went and what did he find and how did he get fixed. That's all knowledge, and that knowledge across an organization is so, so valuable. I think, you know, as you go through that process, I think it links in with other things, stock condition surveys, the housing health and safety rating system, how you embed that in your stock condition surveys, how many properties are visited. We do some things called community standard inspections. Lots of housing associations do those, where they look at the communal areas. But at the same time, knock on a few doors, have a chat with people. Maybe they're the people who don't or haven't reported a repair for the last 2 years. Maybe because they're on that list that I talked about earlier. Maybe they're just someone who's moved in very recently. Maybe it's the first time they've had their own home. It could be a young sort of parent with a child or something. It is worth just knocking on the door and saying, in Coastline, how's it all going? I think having that conversation is so, so important. You know, there are lots and lots of tricky situations out there, and I think you have to sometimes confront them, sort of absorb what people tell you and listen, and then sort of take it to the right people to make sure those things can get resolved. Something else that we did really was we brought our stock condition survey in-house. So I think in terms of other associations, if they're thinking or they're looking at stock condition surveys, I think you'll find... And, you know, I've been in this organisation for 23 and a half years, and we always had independent stock condition surveys. That's how we used to operate. It was the norm. And I think a lot of housing associations have done the same. They're moving away from that now. So, you know, having your own team means that you can start adding specifics into that survey, like the damp and the mould and how big was the patch. You won't get that from, generally stock condition surveys. We can get that from them. How did the conversation go? Did you have any sort of other sort of concerns about vulnerability? Did you notice any hoarding? Did you look like the cooker's been used? There's conversation pieces as you're walking around. There's a real ownership, I think, then. Certainly our stock condition surveyors have been fantastic. They raise their own repairs, you know. So when they go to a property, they can do those online on the tablet. So they can raise a repair there and then and say to the customer, I've just raised that for you, so that should get fixed. And it's a 20-day priority or whatever the priority might be. So I think there's a lot more value, and I think there's a lot more social value within having your own in-house stock condition surveyors. And I think that's really important.
Great way of supporting those who are not digitally enabled, or perhaps English isn't their first language, yeah, or whatever other issues there might be. A great way of doing that and being really proactive.
Yeah, and you know, there's all sorts of other sort of challenges, you know, dyslexia, inability to read or write. You know, there's lots of other things that might be going on that keep people sort of much quieter and keep them out of contact.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So we are obviously the Housing Ombudsman. We deal with housing complaints. So my next question to you, my final question is, how do you guys at Coastline learn from complaints, and what is the impact of the way that you learn from complaints? What is the impact of that on your organisation, and what is the impact of that on the residents as well?
Yeah, I think you probably come across that we're really open. So this is not about challenging people. This is about sort of having a positive culture across the whole organisation that actually complaints, you know, the old adage is they're opportunities, and they are. I mean, they're opportunities for someone to feedback to us that actually, I don't like the way that is done. I much prefer this. I don't like waiting 4 months for a repair that I think you should have done last week, within a week. Whatever that complaint might be, you need to take the value out of it and how to look at it. And just be honest and just say, actually, yeah, I think I'd be quite concerned if I had to wait that amount of time for that to be fixed. So why did that happen? What was the process? Oh, the customer wasn't in for three of the visits. So, and then we didn't have an engineer on that particular day, so we couldn't. There's all those things. So you start to get some sort of some information back, a little bit of intelligence. Then you can say, actually, so we could change this process slightly, having those sort of text forwards and things, you know, for the repairs which we use, just to make sure that they do know we're coming today or tomorrow. Is that a good period of time to notify them? So dealing with complaints is really pivotal. I think it's really important. And having a sort of no blame culture, I think, goes hand in hand with that. And just making sure that everybody are on board. We use a set of our commitments for our customers. And we tend to look at that sort of from a point of view of, we ask our colleagues if they come across instances that they didn't think were quite fairly handled, then they put forward what they found and what they think should happen. And not always, you won't always have the answer, but if it's flagged to you that actually I noticed this and it feels a bit unfair, then that's good feedback, because there'll be someone in the organisation, a team, a group, who will look at it and say, actually, yeah, we could change that slightly. Why have we done it like that? Or we've done that for 20 years. Well, perhaps we ought to change it then. We ought to make that slightly different. So I think, yeah, that whole learning process is really, really important. We take those actions, we have them then collated. We report those right the way through to our board. Our board understand exactly how the complaints process works. And they look at how many complaints we're getting, what areas their complaints are coming in, and how they're resolved, and whether they're resolved first time, whether they escalated through stage one and stage two, and then what the general outcomes are. We use gestures of goodwill. We do some of the gestures of goodwill payments. We'll also sometimes do things for customers that maybe some other organisations would say, oh, we wouldn't do that, which is fine. It's just that's our culture. We like to try and fix things. And we don't close anything down. Our complaints are kept open until they're fully resolved. And then once they're fully resolved, we'll actually close them out. And we do like to measure the time that's taken. And sometimes that can be various months. You know, some complaints aren't as simple as sort of two letters backwards and forwards, ta-da, it's all fixed. They're a lot more complicated. There's a sequence of other things that might need to happen. That might be around finances. It may be about property and repairs or the heating system or something else. So the temptation is to try to set a target and say all complaints have to be closed in 6 days or something. And actually, that's probably not achievable. And generally, you won't have resolved everything within those 6 days in any case. So it sort of feels like you're always kidding yourself. Look how good we are. It's a KPI for a KPI's sake. Don't get me wrong, we have KPIs, we have targets, and our system is set up with all of those to remind us to make sure that we keep everything on track. But taking slightly longer to resolve a complaint but staying in communication with the customer regularly, making sure they understand what's going on, is, you know, is how it has to work sometimes. And you know, some things take longer than others.
So it's so important having that communication, isn't it? And the resident feeling like you haven't forgotten about them and that you're being proactive in dealing with something. They're living with it day to day. They've got to, you know, they can't go home and get away from the issue. They're living there. So that communication is really important.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that that whole, our customer scrutiny teams, having a scrutiny team unpick a process up, is really, really useful. Their feedback and just their questions after they've had a read through it, we have that sort of open forum conversation. And so why does it take that long? How does this work? Why does it take so long to buy one of those bits? I thought that was easy thing to buy. And actually sometimes they're quite difficult. And if it's heating related, just as an example, then temporary heaters may not be the perfect solution, but that's what we need to do. And actually that's an additional cost potentially for that customer, because it might not be as efficient as their existing heating. We might have done that just at a poor time for them where it was struggling slightly financially. So we should look at how do we cover the cost of those? Because we want to make sure you're heating your home while we deal with your heating system. So it's all those bits that we need to sort of pick those up and unpick them and just be honest about it all and get things fixed. It's so important.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Well, thank you very much for your time. And thank you very much for letting me grill you on all things damp and mould. It's been lovely speaking with you today. So any final words before we wrap up?
I think the biggest thing for me is open the doors, let it all happen, get out there, find out what you've got, find out how many properties, encourage those customers to report every instance of damp mould, whatever it might be. Once you've got them, then you can start to deal with them. When you don't know what's going on, then it's really difficult and you're not building that open relationship, and that's so important. Use a customer scrutiny team. If you haven't got them, pull one together. Get a group of people and say, oh, your job is to critique your way through this process, because that's how we operate at the moment. Is that the best way? And they will definitely tell you whether you're doing the things in the right order, in the right way or not. And that is so useful.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.